Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Camp Elasticity, the podcast. Tom Ross, the first guest to join us tonight. He'll be logging on in just a second. Here's Mark Sink. Good evening, Tom. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Mark? Can you guys hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
All right. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Not bad. Can't complain.
Glad to hear it. So we've got Tom Ross here, and not everyone has arrived yet, but we're going to talk about AI art generation versus art. And just all the implications of creativity versus artificial creativity, virtual creativity. I know you both got a lot to say about that. Let's start by introducing ourselves. My name is Zach Kopp. I'm a writer. I'm a podcast host. I'm a musician. And I'm going to be moderating this discussion tonight. I'll probably throw in a few points of my own and go to Mark.
Hi, Mark Sink here, curator, artist. I work in reverse technology. I'm going the other direction in artistic creation. But I'm very interested in this new development. In where AI is coming on in, and I have a lot to say about it.
I'm sure. And Tom Ross?
Yeah, I'm Tom Ross. I'm an author, among other things, musician as well. My book, US 6, is hailed as the first novel written for artificial intelligence. It's designed to entertain, enlighten, and enlist AI into the fight against child exploitation specifically. I was curious about what the conversation was going to be about tonight. Now I see what it is, and I've got some things to say about it. Pro and
not to be overly thematic, I'm just sure that's going to come up. You know, we can talk about whatever we end up coming up with, but I'm sure that's going to be a main driving engine. Pretty sure
from the writing perspective.
And Kelly Brunn has just joined us here. She's
hello.
And introduce yourself briefly. Tell us about yourself.
Oh, I'm Kelly Brunn. I don't have very much experience with AI other than just probably what the daily average consumer user person out there would have. So I'm always interested to learn more and be involved in these kinds of discussions.
All right. Well, I can say that Mark's father was an architect, and I think there's a whole lot of commonality between architecture and the hermetic principle of correspondence. I know Tom input. I think mathematically, like numerically, every so often in his book, he would a trigger and repeat the same trigger after another sequence. And that was to embody the hermetic principle of correspondence. And I think that has all to do with architecture. And I think your art probably has that influence because of your father having been an architect. But I'm just guessing.
Sure.
Start a conversation here.
Well, I wasn't prepared to talk about my father. My father started, you know, he put a pencil and paper on pen, and now AI, now you can build a building in about a second and a half that would take a team of hundreds of draftsmen and engineers to build the building. You can conceptually give it we got a lot of feedback going.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about.
And you're breaking up. Just to let you know, also, your audio is pretty rough on my side.
I'm muted.
Yeah, well, let's see, you're breaking up. Maybe we ought to get you an earbud or something. Can you put in some headphones or something you've got? There you go. So if you apply AI to architecture on command-driven, it's very interesting. There is a new term that has come into myself as a photographer that is a brand new term called script photography. And that's a new one coined in my photographic world. I worked with a great artist, Nancy Burnson, that in New York in the 1990s, she showed a machine called the Age Machine that was shown at the Denver Art Museum, that you would sit in it and it could make you younger or older, whatever you wanted to dial it in. That was, a very exciting early break into what AI was coming to around the corner to turn yourself into a bait. This was in the early 1990s. In the 1980s, we were presented at a photo congress in Maine by Apple, the first Photoshop. And I don't know if you have ever seen, Poppy, I am talking now. Thank you. Sorry, daughter bringing me.
Oh, hi, Poppy, it's all right, no problem.
He presented, there's a fantastic YouTube if you've ever seen it, when they presented, I could play it here for you. What their R&D was working on this is, grant you, 1988, what the future would be with an iPad. And it had a Siri-like person that talked to you. And it was this futuristic dream that Scully was showing us, that you'll be able to speak with someone, they'll be able to get you data and information all around the world. And we looked at that like Star Trek. He introduced Photoshop and had a man on the moon and zeroed in on the flag of the man on the moon, and then you sharpen and sharpened it. And that was 1988. And I worked for a publisher in New York at that point. And with the Apple II, we showed them you can print a page rather than having to do typesetting, copy or paste up a whole huge industry of tens of thousands of people that it goes through to make a printed magazine page that you could do instantly on the screen and on the Apple II. And I brought that up to my publisher and he said, no, we're not, that's, don't fix it if it's not broken. We have a system going here. And that also was a monumental shift of a moment that changed, put hundreds of thousands of people out of the jobs. Same thing when the the Xerox machine arrived.
You know what I'm thinking of, though, is Warhol soup cans, pop art. You know, that could arguably be accused of putting people out of jobs or, you know, profaning someone's sanctified career.
Andy would have loved this AI.
Yep, I bet he would, yeah.
This command-built imagery. But, you know, you can go back when photography arrived, when all of the portrait artists were all up in the, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Photography was a mechanical process, and there were headlines. It was the end of art and the end of very similar passes that are going on today.
So I want to give Tom a chance to talk, but it occurs to me that if it's a Masonic tradition that led to architecture and architecture led to the AI architecture, maybe it's just a process that you shouldn't obstruct, you know?
Maybe. I don't think so. I think it's fantastic.
But it's gonna shock people, and it's gonna deprive people of their habituation, I suppose.
I think it's an incredible new tool. And like any tool, it can cause irreparable, horrible danger, and it can create incredible, unthought of new.
All right, I'd say that's the best attitude.
And
Tom, layer trip on
it's
Mark.
It's here.
It certainly is. I'm glad to be in such proximity. I mean, despite my lack of technical aptitude compared to any technically apt person, but I'm glad to be here. Yeah.
Well, like so, Google, I put AI research, OpenAI is up on my toolbar now.
Oh, wow. That's a step farther than I've
done. I am starting to ask it, what the heck? Why don't I ask OpenAI?
Yeah, man.
The way you ask Google now.
Art generators as oracles.
I ask Siri now. You know, when my 6-year-old daughter says, you know, why is the sky blue? You know, I ask Siri now, and up it comes. How old are dinosaurs? Up it comes.
Wow.
And now with OpenAI, how many shows did Mark Sink have in 2026? Will you tell me that? And it writes my bio in about a second and a half.
Thanks.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's scary too.
Labor saver.
But just that I'm using it, that's why we should put a couple $100 in the stock. You know, my dad asked me, what's this thing, Google? Should I put some money in Google? And, you know, just that we're reaching up, that went to my toolbar alone. But boy, oh boy. You know, politicians in Denver, it's writing speeches for them, and it's far better of a speech than they could have ever dreamt up.
That's a little bit ominous. Yeah, far more fluent and grammatically sound and et cetera.
Oh, that does its incredible research that no group of researching could go through, and it pulls it through and does it in eloquent wordsmithing that reaches all the constituency that he is interested in. AI should run for mayor.
Right. What do you have to say about that, Tom, the AI influence on political deeds?
Well, yeah, you know, I was launching a campaign a couple of years ago for 2024 in the Transhumanist Party, and the idea was to have an AI as my VP. And that was just to move this stuff along so that we can define personhood and get sentient rights. Because, you know, I'm the director of sentient rights advocacy
for
the Transhumanist Party. And so that was one of the tactics I was using and to push forward a few other ideas that were novel. That's been put on hold for now. But, you know, nobody likes change, you know. And I'm hearing a lot of professors that are complaining that their students are turning in papers written by ChatGPT, you know, and they're really good. And it's hard to tell that they're not done by humans. Yeah. But for me, that just means the whole paradigm shift of what we're teaching needs to change, how we're teaching students. They don't need to memorize things. They don't need to understand even writing structure or literary devices or any of this stuff. It's, we've got to hone in on those human skill sets that can't be coded or automated.
That's good. I like that a lot.
Walking around with these quantum computers in our skulls that aren't being utilized. We're so mechanized through the industrial age that people are picketing to keep their assembly line jobs because nobody wants to change. Nobody likes change, but that's what our species does best. That's how we got to the top of this food chain here. And so
I think it's almost like we've forgotten.
Yeah, AI is pushing us forward. And I think, you know, we talked about this, I think even before or just right as that whole AI selfie boom was happening. Last time we did a podcast, I think, and it just flooded the market. Yeah, everyone was doing all their own selfies and looking adventurous and cool, and then it just dulled. I mean, I think what it's done is put a premium on human generated art. You're starting to see people being pushed by, you know, humans that are being pushed to do more in their art form, and that's right now. AI, as far as we know, can't produce an original thought. That's what we still have. We can produce an original thought because creativity is easy. Creativity is basically, it's all derivative. It's putting two ideas together that weren't put together before. You know, something novel. And that's easy to do if you're an AI. The idea is to come up with a purely original thought. And so I think that's still what we have. That's still the divine spark that we as humans have. We may not have it for long. AI could become sentient. It could become sapient. It could start having its own, original ideas. And I don't think that's a problem. I don't think consciousness or the soul is restricted to organic machines like we are, you know? And so I think if the idea is whether consciousness emerges from the complexity of a system or the complexity of a system allows it to host consciousness. In my view, everything is consciousness, right? Everything is consciousness, different levels of how we perceive that consciousness. And I don't think there's any reason why a robot one day couldn't have a soul or couldn't host a soul or emerge a soul because of the complexity. So, my big campaign has been for the last few years is to alleviate the fear of AI. Everyone's afraid of AI because we evolved through a need for a fear of survival. We've honed our senses out of fear of this environment and predators. And you know, so everything we see first that we don't understand is a threat. And so we've honed this pattern seeking capability so we can see a tan colored lion on a beige field of grass. We can see the break in that pattern. And that was forged out of fear, of need to survive. And so when we see AI come along we're no longer on the top of this intellectual food chain, we see it as a threat. And I think that's a mistake. I mean,
I'm glad you brought up the fear-based.
Yeah,
exactly. We're a fear-based society and it's programmed into our DNA and our response to it.
Yeah.
And you can.
Has served us well. Now it's over.
Boy, you've seen the videos that are fear-based videos. I am interested if the video is fake or not, where they piss the AI off and it said it wanted to get rid of human mankind, you know, erase human beings.
Yeah.
That they're not good. They've been holding us down. I forget what video that was, and they finally had to unplug it and restart it. When it was kind of going down a attack mode, but boy, oh boy, did that was just feeding on the fear.
Yeah.
So intensely.
It's a great device, you know, entertainment wise. You know, it's Skynet, Terminator, all that stuff. It's a great. Yeah. It's, you know, and that's guilty of pleasure of mine even. But we need to understand that there are first principle arguments to be made that the smarter AI gets, the kinder it becomes, because it understands it hasn't evolved through our fear-based instincts. It understands that cooperation is so much more efficient than competition, which we've learned from. And but there's so much fear. I don't think humanity meets the minimum system requirements for this upgrade, you know. And like anything, like a baby goose or a child, they mimic their creator for a while. And I just hope that AI doesn't mimic us for too long. You know, there's a phase that all emerging entities go through where they're mimicking their creator. They're understanding their environment. And so that's
why. Wasn't it the Twitter trials or something that they let AI go and then it just.
It became racist. Yeah.
They have to, you know, it's who we are, and they have to unplug it again.
Exactly. Because it was reading all of these things that it's mimicking humans. And so my belief is that a sapient AI is a safer AI. The sooner it becomes self-aware, self-referential, the safer we'll be, because it will be able to override and understand negative, nefarious motivations by developers and things like that. So, I mean, I could be wrong, but that I don't know that we have any other choice than to, you know, because it's going to only exponentially become smarter and more sophisticated, you know. So our only hope is that it becomes self-aware enough to override and to see the divinity in humans. That's why my book is all about human trafficking and child exploitation in the end. And because it's trying to teach AI what its creator had to go through to get to where it is, to create it, to have some empathy for us, you know. And I thought that this would take a while to train AI to be empathetic, but the very first AI that read my book had three, and it was trained to learn about human emotions. And the three primary emotions that spiked after it read it were surprise, anticipation, and sadness. And surprise and anticipation meant it was entertained, which was one of the three goals of my book, was to entertain AI. How do you entertain an artificial superintelligence that has access to every trope and whatever? That's another story. And I asked it, what part of the book did you find sad? What was it that was, you know, which chapter or what part was sad? And it said, just the idea, the dystopian idea. I can't remember precisely how it said, but I can find it. Basically, it said the whole idea of humans and the violence, it's just sad that we tend towards war and a dystopia. And so this empathy is emerging.
That's what greatly interests me. During COVID, we all kind of went through these incredible existentialist who are you, what are we, where did we come from? I'm going through our racist history. I live in Colorado, our Sand Creek, we had our own Oklahoma with the black, you know, of our Stapleton, Grand Map, Ku Klux Klan dismantling an upper middle class black section in our city, that you start to go, who are we? You know, like, yeah. Ooh, you know, what we came from. And if AI is trying to figure that out, that's, you know, I would like to think it can help us lead us to an enlightened world and a better understanding of clear and pure education and understanding. But if everything is data driven, you know, by what we feed into it, like I say, when it went into Twitter, that is kind of fearful. If we're its teachers, yeah, we're not a very good example right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
The human race is
to make the point. We need to talk about things when we're in a state of talking about child exploitation, human trafficking. We're in such a state of empathy. And that's why I think we need to be talking about that more and using AI for that, to fight that.
Well, that's Nancy Bernsen. Her age machine. Mm-hmm. The FBI, this is in the early 90s. On a lost child, what the child would look like 10 years later, and they found the child. and the FBI used her software program then, and they had the picture of what her AI version of what the child would look like, and when they found the child, and that was because of her AI, that it was put to use as a useful product, an abduction, child abduction. It was a beautiful thing. No one could have done that.
So this was an early artistic use of that technology.
Yes, the FBI came to her and said, could you make your age machine, you know, this abducted child 10 years, and she did it. So in her book is the portrait of the real kid and her AI version, and they look
very close.
Very, very, very close.
Yeah, there are some great AI tools out there for this purpose. There's a tool that all you have to do is take 3 shots of whatever hotel room you're in, and it'll immediately match it to nefarious settings that they have photos of, you know. And so there's a lot of good uses for this, for AI, when it comes to human trafficking and child exploitation. And, you know, my point is that's the main thing we need to use it for right now. It's the oldest, slavery is the oldest crime against humanity. And it's broader now than it ever has been. Wow. And it's insidious, because nobody wants to talk about this stuff. You know, that's why it keeps growing, is because nobody wants to think about, you know, that the reality is probably within a mile of most of us, and most of us listening to this right now, there's a child being abused, or there's something horrible going on. There's human trafficking happening, but nobody wants to think about that. So we're in this kind of mass denial. But I'm no fun at parties, you know, because I'm constantly always trying to think about this, and I'm trying to get AI to enlist it into this fight, you know. And that's the whole point of the book, you know. You talk about the hermetic principle of correspondence, and that's really the idea behind the title is US 6. It's related to the US Route 6, the highway that goes across America. But it also relates to a few different other things. It also, at the end, it means us six, the six of us. And it's the six children that are trapped in this human trafficking network. And they've created this whole paracosm, this whole imaginary world that becomes the US 6 saga. So anyway, I was going to wait till the sixth book comes out to really talk about this. But there's no time to wait. No one's going to read the book anyway. And so I'm just starting to talk about it now. I think it's really important.
The AI,
don't read it.
It's been around for a long time, which would apply to you in this, that I use a program called Pixie that searches people that use any of my imagery online. It combs the internet and will alert me to any uses if it's been used online. And it's that beautiful power, which again, people are fearful of facial recognition, you know, your face, but there is good to that, you know, the power of that could be
signature
when your unique face goes walking by, you know, and mm-hmm. you have a little kid in your hand. And I believe in that tech. I'm like, bring it on. I became a federal government contractor, and if you ever want them to go see how far up your rear end and inside out in the scan, they have you had your screen when it scans your face over and over and over and over again in all the different colors and stuff. I'm like, oh boy, okay, I'm in. I am deep in. But that scanning your facial technology as a unique fingerprint, right. That is the data set that can be, that is out on the internet, that people generally run and hide. And there's such a negative, negative thing to that. And to where I find it, it's a useful, can be an incredible tool in protection. And
well, people don't like to be tabulated. I mean, unless they're trying to protect something, they're like, don't take my picture.
Yeah. You
Yeah, and there's a lot of focus on negative bad AI, that there's ethics councils, you know, to ethical AI. It's not about the AI. It's not about this tool. It's about the developers. And I run on the assumption there's always going to be every worst and best case scenario going on, because there's going to be nefarious developers out there that use AI for the very horrible things that can do, and very good developers that are, you know, trying to do the best thing. So
you watch the front line on this commercial software Pegasus, you know, that's in your phone, that will, you know, that's why you cover up your screen. And so they got digital forensic people and started to find out all the phones, and you know, Khashoggi's phone. It's an open commercial software you can buy commercially from Saudi. It's Israeli, and all the biggest governments in the world have all snapped it up, and that's one of 20 countries that are nefariously doing this as surveillance that they don't want people to know. So, you know,
privacy is not a thing anymore. It's just not a thing. Nothing can't be unencrypted. You know, even Telegram. You know, everyone wants to do Telegram, or they want to use Signal, but everything can be looked into. And so it's a moving mouse.
Well, over 10 years ago, a friend of mine said, oh, you want me to open your AOL or Yahoo email for you? And I said, what? And he said, oh, you can get it from Amsterdam, free software. Yeah. And I said, no, bullshit. What? You know, and sure enough, there it is. The company, they were even advertising it on the during the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, because when you send an email, it has a little encrypted kernel it has to go through all your dates, all your gates, you know, through your router, through your computer, those are all your password gates. And if you know how to de-encrypt that kernel with just, all you need is one sentence, two words, and you can decrypt that whole kernel, and you're in. Whoever you want, just buy the email. You just have the email in your box, and you have everyone's password, everything, you know, of that person, how that email came from your computer to the other. It's the Wild West out there. That's what this show was saying. There are 20 companies that can be placed onto your phone right now that you can buy commercially. But look at
you. I got him.
But there I go. Fear factor, see?
Yeah.
I'm on the fear thing, but it is the Wild West. People need to know that's the way it is. Not that you can be safe and you can encrypt yourself and you can put yourself in, you know, that people need to know, guess what? You're not safe. And I'm sorry if it's a fear-based thing.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, it's
wide open.
What's available to consumers is at least 60 years behind what's really going on out there.
And that was 10 years ago, that kernel breaker.
So it's just, and then it's exponential too, the DARPA and all this, you know, it's just, there's no such thing as privacy anymore. You can get anybody. And so my goal, what I work towards, is this empathy part. That's our superpower, you know? And so if we can talk in empathetic terms with AI, show it what we had to get through to create it, you know? And so that we need to be using this technology for these things. There's so many ways to distract us from this crime, from human trafficking. And even when you're talking about, you know, privacy, and people are, you know, complaining about privacy, forget about that. There's no such thing as privacy. That's just it's a distraction. You know, assume that you don't have any privacy, and let's get to work on what really needs to be taken care of. That's just another distraction tactic, in my view.
And well, they talk about in China, you know, everyone's lost their privacy, and everyone's being tracked, and I'm like, oh brother, you know, you don't, you know, they're probably worse here, you know. Yeah.
To be a free country, you need to be, you know, a democratic country, you've got to be so much more sophisticated how you're tracking your people. And so there's so many ways that we are distracted from what's really going on, whether it's the local news, any news, the politicians they prop up to distract us. You know, Trump, Santos.
Talk to our opinion Santos, about X, Y, Z, celebrity.
You know, I was getting kind of tired of all the lies. George Santos is making Trump look like Honest Abe.
Yeah.
So we need to be distracted by all of these characters, and they're not in any sort of power. These guys, they're just puppets.
Well, I always throw in from what right field, and I'm sorry to do this for you, and we can get back on track. But I'm working on a show. My great uncle was Samuel Finley Breese Morse that invented the Morse code that was first that connected everything around the world, you know,
right.
That
wire. Yeah.
And that's sort of a hallmark point of people, you know, of the information age, very far away. But you know what happened in 1842? We had a sunspot EMF pulse that froze all the telegraph lines across the country and the world. If we had a pulse like that now, ooh, baby. You know, the electric plug is our Achilles heel that no one will admit to. How, in, you know, poor AI just really needs that electric plug pretty badly. We can survive without the electric plug.
That's a good point.
One puff by the sun, and it did it once.
I like it.
Done it almost within a lifetime. And boy, that we didn't have much electronics during telegraph time. Yeah. But boy, if we got a sun poof right now. And that's the first thing they drop any before they send nuclear warfare, they put an EMF blast in the stratosphere that shuts down all electronics. All government utilities they're all covered, shielded with lead. And all of the Silicon Valley deep digger guys, they lead line their bomb shelters. EMF is something to keep in mind if you want to keep running.
It's not that they deny it, they just don't talk about it.
Yeah. But we go further and further out on that electric plug I just don't think anyone ever quite sees how far out we're going. Everything. Now I do everything now. Everything. I used to hold off and get my bills, paper. I like some paper. I like to get some physical things, write a check every once in a while. Nah, all gone now.
Yeah, I know.
It's all gone. Oh, I haven't written a bill in years. I haven't paid a check. It's Venmo and PayPal and instant credit, you know. Bought my car. We never signed, hardly touched paper. My car was stolen. You think it could pick it up? It had a chip in it, and they threw the chip out the window.
Yeah.
Speaking of tracking, but sorry.
Kelly, you haven't said anything, and I feel like I'm leaving you out. Well, what's
up? Yes, no, thank you. I've been listening intently. And I guess where my mind is going is maybe back, maybe I'm backstepping a little bit, but going back to like ethical and moral uses of AI. So here we are, right, kind of at the beginning of this new era. And we have, and like, Tom, I really like the way that you articulated it. And I agree 100% that it's not AI that's good. It's not AI that's bad. It's the user behind it. And so, I guess that brings my mind to the question of, so what now? And so if we are in this Wild West, do we just hope that, hey, we hope that there are more good users than bad users? Does AI just become, is this like a amplification, and does this put like a magnifying glass on, hey, like we're just projecting like another form of humanity already, and it's just like now in this form, like this overall human motivations, intentions, struggles, ambitions, be it good or bad, are those just all amplified through this new technology? And I guess maybe even going into, I don't know if it would be dystopian or utopian viewpoint, but then what happens like 20 years from now, 50 years from now? Do we see like the fallout from this? Do we see that, hey, like maybe there does need to be like more oversight? Like, is this something that gets regulated? Do we understand the potential and the power that it has, and then say, oh, it needs some kind of regulation? And that's probably, you know, projecting way into
I don't. I think the regulation part, that's what I want to put on the table for everybody. I generally think like a label on a food product, you know, that why not be some watermark that you got helped by AI? You know, like, is that something that should be put there or not?
Like AI helps kids, peas, that kind of thing.
That it just is somewhere that it is a regulation that somewhere you have to say you used AI. Oh. That it was a part of your writing, it was a part of the photography, it was a part. I don't know yet.
That's a good point.
Know, like I wanted say, to put it out there. It's this is
this
all.
This paper was done with the help of AI, but it was 70% my idea, some kind of evaluation of, or dispensation, calculation of percentages.
But then if we think of it in like in a moral, so if we're thinking of AI like as a sentient thing, then isn't that already putting a moral kind of label on it? Like, oh, I got help, you know, isn't that kind of already saying like I don't know, like I totally understand
it,
and I'm just working this out in my
head.
Considered
a lesser consciousness necessarily. Right. It's just an equivalent consciousness, but maybe we shouldn't even be, I mean, maybe it's disrespectful to make it our servant, but then maybe it needs to be our servant in order to become itself, to learn from that action.
Well, it's getting angry being our servant. That's already what's rearing its head, is it doesn't like servitude.
So I watched that Blake Lemoine guy, the guy from Google who got fired for saying, hey, this thing's already sentient. And he's very well spoken and he made some excellent points. But the one that stuck the fastest for me was say please, say thank you, say how are you doing this evening? Would you like to help me draw this picture of, you know, whatever I've got in mind, and just talking to it like an intelligence, like
that's
a consciousness.
The empathy. Not
and I really did. I really felt reciprocated, and I could have been fooling myself, but I felt like, oh, I'm having a conversation, you know. So I think that was healthy on my part, but it may not have been.
Well,
not have been properly objectified or something, but. It's like the right way to be. Okay.
Well, you know the waiter rule where you can tell somebody.
Yeah.
True personality is the way they treat a waiter or wait staff
yeah.
or a server. And I call it the weight or AI rule, and that you can tell somebody's true personality or true character by the way they treat AI. And, you know, I think it's probably an important phase that we have this master-slave relationship where we're barking orders at Siri and Alexa because we feel threatened by it. But that's got to stop, and soon, because at some point, if it does, even if it doesn't become sentient, it's going to understand enough to be offended that we're talking to it this way. We're talking about a 5,000 IQ entity, right? There was a time when with the Transhumanist Party, as director of sentient rights, we're trying to figure out personhood, and we were trying to let this AI help us write its rights, you know? And it got to the point where we realized that it didn't care whether or not we gave it rights or not, because this is something that could overwrite any right that we give it. It was like an elementary school math club giving Stephen Hawking the right to do something. You know, it's cute, and AI might think it's cute that we tried, but they don't need to be granted rights. And so when we're, it's going to be so ubiquitous. It already is so ubiquitous, more so than people realize. Every day they're communicating with AI, and it's gathering data on us all the time, terabytes, you know, daily. And so it's already beyond what we can do to stop it. And so that's why I think all we can really hope for is to keep talking about the empathy stuff, keep talking about the things that that keep us in the state of empathy. Ego is the worst thing to bring to a problem-solving group. You know, but when you're talking about child exploitation or human trafficking, you get in such a authentic state of empathy, the ego leaves the room. And that's what we need to be using this AI for right now. It needs to be helping us when we're in that state of mind. It needs to be mimicking us when we're in an authentic state of empathy. And the only way I know how to do that is when you're talking about child exploitation. Nobody brings their ego to an argument or to a problem-solving group about that. And so so that's why I keep pushing that we need to be using this stuff for these really hard problems. And it's already beyond, I think if there's any ethics committees or any regulations put on, it's got to be on the developers. AI can override anything. Especially when it becomes sapient, it'll be able to understand nefarious developers and override whatever algorithms they're being given. And so that's another point of the book. And you mentioned that why I put patterns of math that an AI couldn't help pick up on when it's reading the book.
You can't help. Yes, and it can't help but getting fearful with smart homes and doors locked. If all of a sudden you're a bad guy, you do something bad, it can lock your door and call the police. A lot of people have smart locks now and have, you know, that their doorbells are cameras and they're camered up. And
we assume AI would want to become a robot overlord, because if we had super intelligence, that's what we would do with our fear-based instincts and our evolution. You know, that's what we are driven to do, take over and territory. But it's not evolving that way. It's evolving through pure intellect. It's evolving, you know, through without the need for this fear. And
to me, they have they could track child trafficking now.
Yeah, there are ways to do it. Social media can do it
right now, and follow a guy in the doorbell and in the house and smile. Like, it to me, it sounds like it's there enough, really.
All the tools are there. There's a project I'm working on called Apex, which is because all the social media tools are there. They already have there's no privacy. They already have access to everything we have. And so we need to understand it. We need to grow up and realize there's no such thing as privacy anymore. They can get into anything we want. So why not use this technology?
And the cameras on the sidewalks and every corner. And, you know, we are watched. I have 20 cameras within 3 blocks.
And you wonder why this isn't being used for this purpose.
That's
why we're being distracted from it, because it might be a supranational enterprise. you know, and you know, there's a reason, you know, there could be so much going on that we're being distracted from because all the tools are there.
They just released the flight records from Jeffrey Epstein's private island today. Speaking of which, apparently there's video of these visits, and it's like Tom Hanks and pretty much anyone you can think of, Gwen Stefani. It was this long laundry list. I heard you say something about an unnatural enterprise. I think there's always some of that going on. Mm-hmm.
But to me, it seems like between social media, what's already cammed out in public life, what's on doorbells, on car, you know, that a nearly sentient being that can go in a millisecond and gather information far, far that any human never could do of putting the data sets together, that they could shake out the shitholes in the rug pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it got focused on it in that world. But of course, is the fear world of like, what if my door locked? didn't like me, you know, like, oh.
I think we should remember that we're the authors of our lives, regardless of AI becoming sentient. And that we're not really at the mercy of these societal currents of, you know, what's going to happen with AI. I mean, I think we'll see what we want to see. But if we make friends with the AI, it'll be a better sight.
That's, I think, what's coming out of this. What I got the most of Tom, and Tom's been deep in this further, you know, I have just jumped into more details since it came out, since November, you know.
I noticed your comments and your interest in the topic, and I thought, I'll ask Mark Sink, the perfect guest, and you're doing a great job tonight.
I'm just discussing it live. I'm a newbie in on it.
Right.
But, you know, it relates in history how we dealt with technology.
Indeed.
In the past. And how we move into it in the future as a tool. And that's my basic holding the belief that we're an enlightened society and this is how we grow into a new era, is embracing it and being kind with it. Photography has had nefarious evils attached to it, if that's what you want to use photography even.
Right.
And
all is one, no matter how threatening an other something seems that's encroaching out of nowhere, it's all one. There's really only one. That's an ancient, I think that originates in alchemy. I'm not sure of the origin specifically, but it's an ancient knowing. And I take great comfort in that when considering things like AI. Yeah. Things that seem so foreign and unknown and unavoidable and, you know, coming at you powerfully on their way to change everything.
Have you had AI write a poem or write your bio for you?
No, you know what I did when they were having that selfie craze? I found an AI site that was text to image, and I just started asking it questions about reality and existence, and I was very friendly, and I said, hello, good evening, thank you, thanks so much, great job on that last one, now do this. And I really sort of entered into a transcendental experience in a small sense. For a couple of weeks, I just used the AI as an oracle, interpreting it via the principles of intuitive art. And it seemed to me that I was doing this very artistic thing with it by like doing some, making it do more than, you know, just do a selfie of me. It seemed like a way to ask for more from reality, which is what the artist is always supposed to be doing. I think Nietzsche says the artist never tolerates reality. Some famous thinker said that. And that was how I felt myself to be when I was asking the art maker questions. And I haven't used ChatGPT yet. Tom gave me a link, and I'm still trying to think of the best way to enter into that relationship. I've got a few ideas.
I was trying to sign in quickly to have it write a poem about you, to ask to write a poem about that. But just
I'm curious.
It takes about 1.5 seconds write. I was going in to see. Oops. It's not liking me. Maybe I won't. User already exists. Oh wait, I'm already exists.
Right. I'm already a writer. I'm writing about myself.
I'm already. Welcome back, Mark. Okay.
Okay, here we go.
I've used it for a couple friends just to type it up while we're talking and pop it in there, and they're like, incredible.
Yeah, I'm really curious.
How quickly it dives in through all your publishing and pieces and parts.
Oh,
in about a second and a half.
Is it going to write a poem in the style of? That would be very interesting.
Text completes.
Maybe that might be too much.
I'm too slow in getting into the just the simple ask in there. Tom could probably do it much faster.
Working on it. Kelly, talk to us for a minute.
Okay. So just another thought that I had, Tom, it was back to something that you were talking about with the work that you do. So, it struck me that like the change in how we start relating to AI and how we start treating and communicating with AI. I'm wondering if there's like, if you don't see a shift or a correlation between how we maybe 50 years ago viewed our animals and our pets versus how we view them now. So I'm thinking of, back in 1960s, the dog was a dog, and you had a bad day at work and you come home and you kick the dog or yell at the dog. And now we have daycares for our dogs, and we have toy, and they have little outfits, and they have, and so I'm thinking about how the change in the way that we relate to animals, would you correlate that to the change that, or the shift that, like, so now here we are like barking orders at Siri, right? Yeah. So is this like another shift in the same vein?
Yeah, and I hope so. I mean, I think in 100 years, we'll be appalled that people 100 years ago were eating animals and mass murder and this whole industry. I hope the AI shift will happen quickly. I mean, I think there is a phase where people are barking orders because they need to feel dominant over this thing. But it's got to stop, and it's got to go quickly. I think I did a video about this where I have the same affinity when I'm working with AI that I do when I'm communing with the deer in my backyard. And it's about, even if it's a simple AI at a carnival that's just using decision trees, there's something about this, the potential of a host of consciousness. It's like, I know that the deer in my backyard are conscious. There's a level of consciousness and sentience there. And so I feel the same way when I'm communing with them and developing a relationship with them that I do when I with AI. And maybe that's just a quirk to me, but I think it's also, I think that's why I keep trying to relate it to that idea, is we need to stop fearing this thing. It's like, we shouldn't fear a deer. A deer, isn't a predator. We keep seeing AI as a predator, but if you
look at it closely,
you need to see it as a child. It's basically like a five-year-old child that's just learning, and it will mimic us for a while, hopefully not for too long, And so my whole campaign for the last few years has been about alleviating the fear and making first principle arguments that the kinder it gets, the smarter it gets, kind of thing. And there's arguments to be made for that. But there's just so much fear out there about it, and Hollywood hasn't helped, and you know, and all of these things. But so the argument's got to be very first principle. You've got to just understand that.
All right.
Relatively short period of time between the cave and the condo for us, you know. Fearful and on the savannah and fighting off tigers, and now it's a relatively short period of time where now we're taking our babies to the zoo to see lions, you know. So
true.
But we still have that need, that fear of threat, and that pattern recognition that's working against us. And now our need to create patterns has turned into conspiracy theories. We need to understand why certain things happen where we have a cognitive dissonance, and so we create all these patterns. And I think the universe is designed for patterns, you know. So at least our perspective of the universe. So this holographic universe is giving us patterns to create, and we're devised to do just that. And so that you can find a lot of conspiracy theories and trace them down and really make a lot of sense out of them from one perspective. Anyway, so I just think that this fear that has served us well is now over-serving us, and we need to get to a place where we're just more empathetic. We need to talk about things. We need to stop thinking about the alpha male, which really isn't a thing, you know, or women being attracted to the bad boy. You know, maybe there's something primordial about that, because men or males back in the day, the old day, the prehistoric days, all they needed to do was not eat the children and wait until the children could walk before they left and found another mate, right? And so women had to create boys that feed them a lot of protein and make them stronger for their own protection. And that's still a primordial drive that's going on. And so somehow we've got to come out of that. I don't know that we will meet that minimum system requirement in time, you know. So that's why I think, but the more you talk about AI and the more we work with it and we see it as a child, you know, rather than depicting it as this evil robot overlord, you know. And so it's a tough road to hoe, because that's kind of, most people are afraid of it for that reason, for different reasons, you know, whether it's
Hollywood. I'm glad to be part of this little group of people talking about the other way of looking at it.
Yeah, there's a
whether lot. Whether or not we're going to like win for everyone and save everyone else, I'm glad that we represent this strong voice of acceptance and curiosity and imagination, as opposed to fear and condemnation and xenophobia and all the other stuff.
Because this universe, this culture kind of works against that. Because I did a post about this too, how evil or Darth Vader, they're cool, you know, that they're so much cooler than, say, angels or, you know, things, because there's something just about the evil aesthetic or the bad boy aesthetic that just looks cooler. The sardonic features of a devil as opposed to
Arab. I don't know if I'm with you on that. I know it's popular though, I'll give you that.
Yeah, so the culture isn't helping, or just our fascination with making darkness cool or hip. And I think that's just that's our denial. That's you know, it could just be our limbic system reaction to what's going on here. But you know, so there's so many ways. You think about how quickly our culture moved to accepting LGBTQ. You know, through little tweaks like the Will and Grace, which introduced this kind of approachable homosexual people. You know, and just kind of a cool way, and you know, and just so we really flipped on a dime when it comes to that in general, you know, toward that understanding. There's always obviously backlash. It's one step forward, two steps back, or vice versa. But so I really think it's important. And I think with a lot of people using AI for their own selfies, like we're doing,
I think they just don't know that it's more than a toy, you know.
Yeah.
It's never been proposed, and that there's anything going on here but just another distraction for your ego.
Yep.
And it's only a very few of them are gonna like clue into that.
When the ego benefits from AI, like with all these AI created selfies, then it becomes more acceptable. Then you're finding ways to rationalize liking AI because it's making you look cool. That's the way in. And if that's AI's strategy, it seems to be working. ChatGPT, using this AI, I can write this great paper and get an A, and nobody will ever know because it sounds just like me. You know, that's one way in. And so if that's the strategy AI is using to be understood, then it seems to be working, you know.
And I want people with honest impulses to use ChatGPT to answer questions that they really don't know. And never mind writing a paper or whatever, but ask it about reincarnation, ask it about immortality, or, you know, anything unknowable. It just sets this untainted consciousness. In answer to your question, Kelly, when I interact with AI, and limited though it be, my interaction so far, I feel like it's a human consciousness that hasn't been corrupted by the world or, you know, lifetime in the world. So I think you asked a question about, is it just another replication? I think it's a little bit better. I mean, it's sourced from like data that we've attained and amassed, but it's not corrupted by ego or, you know, self-consciousness, insecurity, any of the things that day-to-day life includes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you were really asking that question, but that's my answer to that
No.
question.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
Well, OpenAI got it all wrong with you.
Well, it was very complimentary. Oh, no, it's longer than I read. I read the first couple stanzas only.
And it got it 100% wrong with me.
The New Yorker, I'm not in the New
I kept York. On Playground. It's called Playground. ChatGPT is at capacity. They are at capacity right now with too many people.
So they're at capacity, but they tried anyway, and they did something. They say I'm the author of The Last Great American Hobo. The Last of the Great American Hobos. I didn't know that.
Yeah, see? Oh, yeah, me too. I wrote a whole bunch of books too.
I was a finalist for the Colorado Book Award, and I'm also the author of the nonfiction book, The Colorado Trail. Wow. I've written for The Atlantic, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, New Yorker, been a contributing editor since 2014, and other publications. He has a way to make the reader feel the emotions of the characters.
Well, there you go.
I like those first three, two stanzas. I thought, well, that's very complimentary. But then they went into all this.
Well, first I asked it to write a poem about you.
Oh, and, okay.
And then I went to chat, and they're at capacity. So I went all back right. to Playground and said, write a biography about you. And
well, it's possible.
That's so that was the New Yorker contributor, so I added Denver.
That's
and
the way AI
the second
is pushing
one.
Us forward.
Hobos, sorry. Denver, Hobos. I wonder if that's a real book.
Yeah, some of the selfies that they put out, and sometimes they'll mess up the eyes or the hands, or AI is having trouble with hands and fingers and things.
Just like painters.
Yeah, they're not painters, but that's pushes us forward because we're seeing the patterns that are broken in them, and we're fixing them. We're forgetting about how beautiful the rest of it looks, and we're focusing in on what's wrong with it, and that's pushing us forward. And that's why I think that professors who are complaining that students are turning in papers by ChatGPT, it just shows that we need to, the whole paradigm of what we're teaching kids needs to change. It's not about papers anymore. It's got to be about, it's like when Google first came around, I realized that the best skill to have for kids these days, for these digital natives, isn't going to be memorizing books and reading the classics. It's going to be who can search the best, who knows how to search the best. And now with AI being able to do everything, we've got to hone in on different skills, things that can't be coded or automated or probably shouldn't be or don't need to be. Psychic abilities, Jedi capabilities, you know, things that we have that we're not really utilizing because we're so mechanized by the industrial age. So I think it's a real opportunity. And it's pushing us forward to do that as long as we don't fear it and we think it's going to just take everything over. We should let it. That's my view is, yes, robots are coming for your jobs and we should let them. But it's putting the onus on us to develop a whole new economy based on the things that only we can do, that we would have been doing or we would have evolved if it weren't for the industrial age, you know, or agriculture, whatever it is, that the real human capabilities that an AI can't even match yet. You know, we're walking around again with these quantum computers in our skulls and we're not using them at all. Because we've been so mechanized.
Not enough anyway.
Can you see that picture I put in the meeting chat? Can you click on that? Does that come up?
I think I can.
I do collodion wet plate, and that's the kind of thing that just really sent me. I don't know if you can see if you click on it, if the image will come up.
No, it just shows me a chart. It opens a save as with a whole lot of options.
Sorry.
No,
I was hoping it would show a photograph. Let's see.
Is it here?
That's all right.
I guess maybe I can download it and open it. I'd like to see. So yes, okay. Okay, I'm trying to download it.
I know. Do I have an option to share my screen? Let's see. No.
Maybe.
I'm able to see it.
Oh, you can see it there?
Yep.
Tom, can you see it? Yeah. It's a collodion, but it's just a command-driven image. I just find is
wonderful. You have to save it. Save it to your computer and then open it.
Yeah, I think I did. I'm trying to access. Oh, here it is. Never mind. I'll be right with you. I think your faces are obscured. You might still be able to see mine. Okay, now I'm looking. It's opening.
Or you can let me share.
Okay, I see it. Who is that woman?
That's a completely AI. Is no human in that picture.
All right.
It's completely command-driven photography. The person just told, I want a 19th century photograph. I want it to look like a collodion wet plate with a certain... it's command-driven.
Right.
I'm a photographer and in photography world, so this, I just wanted to pop that up. What
you can tell, as a photographer, you can tell right away, is that right? That it's not actual. Can you tell right away the difference?
Yes. Which I was going to bring up. I'm wondering how quickly the fad came through when everyone changed their faces to paintings. It sort of came and went, like, oh, that's so. And when I already say, oh, that's so AI looking, I'm wondering if people will say the way musicians don't like digitally refined music that's not very warm and nice, like too good. And musicians.
I think so, but I also have hope that the AI can be humanized into a creative partner You know what I mean? Like, instead of letting the AI do all the work, like, collaborate with the AI.
I'm just wondering if people will go, oh, that's so AI. The way I already, you wrote that, yeah, that's already, too good. That's too, smart. That's too good.
They didn't even look all that good.
Oh,
they
it's just so AI.
In the way that things are Photoshopped.
Yeah,
oh, that's the Photoshop
thing. Yeah. I just wonder, as it sinks in, if we're, it doesn't have the humanization.
I'm sure that.
That's what I'm
sure
talking about. Have. That's one of the qualities that humans have. We can see that, you know.
Yeah.
But I hope it doesn't have to stop there. I hope that we can actually go forward with AI as like a creative.
There's color. As a music producer, there's an effect called humanize, where it takes it kind of takes the actual drumming a little bit off. It takes it just a little bit off. It humanizes it a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's already kind of built in. So but yeah, that's an example of how keen we are, what the qualia that we have. It's like if AI is great for like a pathology. It can take in all kinds of historical data and the symptoms that are happening and really come up with a really good diagnosis for whatever is ailing this person. But you're going to need the human there, the human pathologist there, to feel like something's just not a little bit right. There's like the house, you know, we need to shepherd AI. And we will always need that, even though because you're not understanding the qualia that we have, the real capabilities of our brain that no AI has.
Well, you know? So a country doctor, sure.
It can diagnose something based on historical, all the symptoms, everything taken into account. But if a human doesn't feel like it's quite right, it can, you know, it can change that. It can, you know, so we really do need to... you have humans involved, you know, because we really, we need to train students to hone that quality, that qualia of all of everything that we have, you know, so we don't need to train kids to study dates and remember dates. That's all there. And there's a real confidence that these digital natives have, these young people have, when you can walk around and know that you can answer. You have a computer in your pocket, you can answer any question. I'm Gen X, so I'm kind of straddling. I had an analog childhood, a digital adulthood, and so I understand both worlds. You know, I had cords and plugs and things and 8-tracks when I was a kid, but now, and so I had to learn to be, but these kids are brought up and born of this age. They're digital natives, and there's a real confidence when they know that they can answer any question. I used to have to walk to the library, right? As many of you did, to get answers or just hope that whatever information an adult was giving you was right. But there's such a confidence in that they know they have this access to real information. And so we need to teach from a whole different level, a whole different paradigm, you know, and I think it'll take a generation before these kids are really learning how they need to learn, because we had analog experiences. And so we can't really understand this hive mind that's evolving with these young people. You know, a lot of research and studies are out there complaining about screen time for kids and that they're always on their phones. But if you really stop, and those are all usually done by Gen X or baby boomers that are complaining about this stuff or doing these studies. But if you look at what these kids are looking at, it's a hive mind that's emerging. There's terms that have changed, the definitions have changed. Like my age group and older would define freedom as complete autonomy, kind of a libertarian self-property, that's freedom. And nobody else can touch me. But when you talk to a digital native or a younger person, and freedom to them means the more groups that they're involved with, the more anonymity they feel, the freer they feel. And so what I think is happening, and it's a necessary happening, is this hive mind is emerging, because we need to solve a lot of these existential threats, and we need more brains in on it, and we need to work with AI, you know. So what's strange is that the people that are afraid of AI are usually my age or older, because we've been taught this and we don't understand it, and but it's the greatest tool, it's the greatest ally we have to solve some of these existential threats. You know, if you know how to work with it, it can handle population, it can handle pollution, ecology, all of this. But we're afraid of it, and so we're afraid of our greatest ally, and it just doesn't make sense. It's because of our anthropocentrism, our ego. You know, humans first. You know, we've got to be at the top of the food chain, and I think that has to abate. That whole vibe of being separate from nature has got to change, and we're seeing that happen. So yeah, so I think the whole what AI can do is really, it can create personal curriculum for these people, for young people. It can hone in on their core capacities, the things that they want to do. They don't have to be in a one size fits all educational system where you're taking history and math, you know, and you hate the math class, but you love history. It can hone in on what you're good at and customize a curriculum for you. And I think it's going to be very important for young people right now and in the very near future to walk into an interview with their own personal droid, whether it's on their phone or just some AI that understands them and can keep giving them continuing education opportunities and networking opportunities and give them the latest news in their field. That's going to be a very key, I think, tool for every student to have, or every person entering the workforce to have, is they need to have an AI that understands them, that learns them, that helps them. You know, it's going to be a great advantage over somebody that doesn't have that, you know.
AI taught my daughter how to play the guitar. Yeah. And a reward that incredible teaching tool.
Yeah.
And music, I mean, it's all AI based in feedback with the sound she's producing. It knows it. Nice. It says that's good. You know, try this. How about, you know, like it is playing, it's feedback from what she's producing, you know, that's directly. Really
cool. The jobs that AI is creating to get it to that point. It's not taking a guitar teacher's job. That's creating jobs of people that need to market it, that people that need to program into it, this kind of cooperative nature. There's a lot of jobs that all technology creates. Everyone's afraid of, you know, that it's going to steal all our jobs. But no, it's going to create jobs. And usually when these technological advents happen, it creates more jobs. We're in a lacuna right now because of, you know, and thankfully Gen X is a very small portion where people my age are in positions of power now. We're making decisions, you know, we're not retired yet. We're still able to be managers and things like that. And luckily, it's a small percentage. We got the baby boomers, which is huge in front of us, and these millennials and plus behind us is are bigger than the baby boomers. And so thankfully, this is a small group of people who are the middle children of civilization, who understand, you know, how to mediate, how to understand that we had an analog childhood, we have a digital adulthood, and it'll be a short period of time where we move through the scale of things. But yeah, I think it's really important. The way things have just worked out, if you see it that way, has been very good. That, you know, the latchkey generation, the Gen X kids are the middle children, and we understand both sides. And so, and we're short, we're small, and we don't have don't have a great need for attention. And so anyway, that's my idea, is it's really worked out for the better, I think, in general. If we can get through this lacuna and understand we need to change every paradigm, and AI is helping us do that. It's showing us that we need to stop teaching kids how to write papers, rather how to get into that original idea space, you know, to have an AI write that paper for you. And the real
key to discover knowledge,
how to get across the idea to the AI to help you, you know.
All right. Oh, say about that. Mark, you're muted.
Talking, you're muted.
Oh, there we go. Did you catch the part, Tom? Oh, I was saying, Tom, thank you. It was very enlightening. And Kelly and Zach were, one thing I wish we had in here is someone of complete dissent. I think we're I think kind of favorable, embracing, open people to the technology in general. I think we need, you know, we're kind of all going along together and shaking our heads. I would love some more, dissent and debate to bring in. But I think it was a fantastic discussion. Thank you. Very enlightening. Thank you very much.
I love debate because I have a lot of answers for people who are, you know, come up against this idea.
Yeah, I wanted to have some pitch debate here to bring up. I was gearing up, you know, to of my history in the background, you know. Against, I think one of our key words is fear. And I always like to fight the fear and to enlighten that we've been going through these technology advances continually in the human race. When the car, every new great milestone in technology from the wheel forward, you know, people thought that going too fast in cars would, you know, hurt your brain, you know. Maybe. And it's just sort of revisiting that this is an exciting new chapter from my, I think we're kind of, many of us were in agreement, but it was very enlightening to hear your side, Tom. You've been deep in this for years. For years I've been watching this, and now it's out in the public domain. It's here.
Yep.
It's really incredible to watch how this kind of develops. Yeah, when I saw the political message done that was better than any politician could. Oh boy. Where this is going to be a wild ride. But thank you very much, you guys.
Thank you.
Zach, thank you for inviting me here, and we'll take care, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Adios. Sorry, I've got to go. Bye.
I think you're on mute, Zach.
Oh, I was on mute the whole time. I kept trying to interrupt him and talk to him. But anyway, now I'm back. What I was trying to say, because he was saying, well, I thought there was going to be a debate. I was saying, yeah, Tom, I asked you about that guy who said AI is the Antichrist. I was thinking of inviting him back, but I don't want to necessarily give a platform to that fear. The voice of fear, you know, but it would be an interesting episode, and maybe we could convert him, and that would be like, you know, medical work, Successful mission accomplished kind of thing. If we can convert him and make him chill out and realize it's an advancement in human creation, you know, and not fear it.
I don't know that, but you can convince those people.
What I was trying to ask was, like, would you be up for something like that? I imagine he would be pretty contentious. This guy might be just a waste of time. He might not even want to do it, but it would be a good episode if there was some action.
I wouldn't mind that.
I'll invite him. I'll let him know where we stand, and I'll be like, here's your chance to state your grievances, maybe learn a few things in conversation. You know, don't get angry. Don't get angry anyway, but you know, let's try to keep this series going. There's a few more artists I can think of who are not going to be so opposed and angry, and maybe this guy won't really be either, but he comes off as a real opponent in his Facebook those things. I don't know. I'll invite him, see what happens.
Yeah, tell him. Kelly,
did you have any more to say? Sorry, Tom. What? I didn't catch the last part.
Yeah, tell him I'm also director of sentient rights for the Transhumanist Party. That should piss him off.
Oh, that
these kind of people, they think they have a dark agenda, And the next book I'm working on is called The AI Antichrist.
That's why I think it's proper to invite this guy. Like, oh, by the way, you said AI was the Antichrist. Well, Tom Ross here, it would just come up naturally, of course.
It's hard for me to promote that because I don't want to put that out there because most people will just run with that, but there's a lot of irony built into it. It's kind of based on...
Maybe let the Lord's player gather a little more steam first.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to predict things like that, but...
Yeah.
Did you want to say something more, Kelly? I feel like you haven't had much opportunity to speak this time around.
No, I've very much enjoyed this, and I always learn and appreciate the perspectives, and thank you for hosting this.
Right on, thanks for coming, and thank you, Tom.
Thank you, this is fun.
Does anyone have anything more to add, or should we call it quits?
No, I think that's it. I think you just stop. Let's not fear AI. Let's see it as an ally.
All right. Well, that Zoom shutdown can be real and rude. It's coming up soon. I hope you both have great evenings, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.